This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 62 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. How are you? It's
good.
Been a busy week, a three-podcast week for me, but now it's time for number three, where we get to talk UAVs.
Well, I don't know. It may not be a three-podcast week for me, but it was three nights worth of recording.
So, that's true.
Tonight's episode, we're going to be heading down to the farm, I guess you would say. Our topics are the FAA ruling slows ag research, the White House wants feds to disclose their use of drones, wearable drones, UAVs preventing poaching, and I think we'll go a little into pop culture with Facebook and Star Wars. So who knew that they would be involved with drones? Well, our first story tonight is the FAA is sluggish UAV ruling slows ag research group suggests. This is from farmfutures.com. And clearly, the agribusiness, which we've sort of concluded, I think, Max, you would agree with this, that is the group of people who really, really want to get using drones for commercial use. Are kind of chafing at the bit now because the FAA is moving at FAA pace, which is slower than I don't know what.
That's right, David. On both counts, the farmers are just so eager to get started because they can see so many benefits from unmanned vehicles. We've talked about many of these things in the past, but things like crop surveys and surveying the irrigation of the fields, pest control, there are just many, many applications, and they really want to get started with this. So we see in this story that the farmers in Louisiana, as well as some representatives from Louisiana State University's Ag Center, they've formed a 17-member study group, which is headed by a state senator.
And the study group wants to give a little push to the FAA by issuing some recommendations for agribusiness UAS regulations. The LSU Ag Center Associate Vice Chancellor for Plant and Soil Sciences, Rogers Leonard, says, quote, current rules are somewhat outdated and address the issues with hobbyist aircraft and on the other end of the spectrum, commercial piloted aircraft. But UAS use in agriculture really does not fit within either of those areas. Close quote.
And I think that's a true statement.
Very true. But this is what the FAA is supposed to be doing. Agribusiness does use aircraft, I mean, for spraying crops and surveying such, but I don't know what the hobbyist end, if there's actually anybody using hobbyist quality equipment for their farming. So it's going to be a tough call. I'm looking forward to see what they want to do as suggestions.
Yeah, the group is kind of thinking along several lines. One interesting one is that in addition to the regulatory policies and guidelines that the FAA creates, the group recommends that states be allowed to develop additional regulatory policies that are applicable, well, I guess, to the conditions, the situations in their state. They also make the point that the COA process that we've talked about many, many times, they feel it's too cumbersome and it's not flexible enough for agriculture. Another problem, and this again is something that we've mentioned in general, but teaching farmers how to use drones is difficult because, you know, it starts to become commercial and that's an issue. So I think they have a great idea to try to pool their knowledge base and their understanding of agriculture and try to pass along as much of that as they can to the FAA.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned, though, about the states developing their own rules for the UAVs. We've had a lot of states try to fill the vacuum right now, but, I mean, the FAA is technically in charge of the universe from the ground up. I hesitate that whole states' rights versus federal authority, but we'll see.
You know what maybe is even a little more appealing to me is regulations or guidelines established by different industries. So, yeah, while I agree that different states shouldn't create, or different countries really, but sticking with the United States, different states shouldn't create a hodgepodge of regulations. But I could see how, for example, agriculture might have best practices and guidelines for that industry that may be different than, say, those that might be applicable to the real estate industry. And it'd be kind of tough for the FAA to sort of dive into each of these industries and fine-tune the guidelines or the regulations. But I could see it working on an industry-by-industry basis. But, you know, somehow that has to be all coordinated.
Well, yeah, but there is a difference between regulations and best practices.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're Hollywood supposedly is going to regulate themselves because they've gotten the COAs for those six organizations. And agriculture probably could do the same thing, but they should be in a position now to start thinking about those best practices. Maybe not try to go down the regulation, I think, but what would be best practices for agribusiness? So I guess we'll follow up with the LSU Tigers to see what stripes show up eventually. So what's our next story?
This is from the Washington Post, and this came in from Drone Mama. White House plans to require federal agencies to provide details about drones. The Obama administration has been talking about an executive order that would make government use of drones more transparent. And what we see here is that the Obama administration has actually started circulating a draft executive order to some of the government agencies. Now, this order would apply to federal agencies, like, for example, the DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, the Pentagon, Justice Department, NASA, the Interior Department, the Commerce Department, users of drones like that. And it would put some requirements on these agencies.
They want to provide information about the size of their fleet, how it's used, and what's done. And the biggest one is, and this is not so much regulation as it is monitoring privacy concerns, what is done with the data collected. Chris Calabrese, the legislative counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union, says, quote, "We're undergoing a quiet revolution in aerial surveillance, but we haven't had all in one place a clear picture of how this technology is being used, nor is it clear that the agencies themselves know how it's being used." That second part is even a more interesting statement.
It's kind of scary. So, obviously, the privacy advocates are very much in favor of this. And the kind of information that would be made public is the kind of information that's just really not known now and very difficult to get a hold of. And this article gives some examples where, for example, back in 2013, Congress ordered the Defense Department to produce a report on its policies for sharing data from drones. And Congress has heard nothing yet. Also, the Department of Justice, the FBI, have both been reluctant to divulge any information. And even in suits under the Freedom of Information Act, the FBI has provided documents, but they've been so heavily redacted as to be of, you know, really limited views.
Which isn't surprising. But we'll see what comes of this if there even gets the executive order gets issued. I don't know if the Department of Justice or the FBI wants to release that they are using Homeland Security's drones or for purposes of tracking individuals. It might give them, I don't know, if they're tracking them for a reason, it might give them an advantage or such. So I don't know. I'm not really sure what to think about this information. And then after we get it, what are we supposed to do with it? Go, oh, okay, that's nice. I'm afraid that all this will result in is a bunch of lawsuits later.
I hope not. Well, I guess it's worth mentioning also that this executive order applies to government use. It's not commercial use or any other use. This only applies to use of UAVs by government agencies in domestic airspace, not internationally. And it also doesn't apply to sensitive operations of the military and law enforcement agencies. I'm not sure what the definition of sensitive operations are, but I could understand how there might be some cases where this data wouldn't be so transparent. But even in those cases where they wouldn't have to provide information, the idea here is that they would still have to post some basic information about their privacy safeguards. So even if they're not divulging information, they have to at least talk about their privacy safeguards.
So let's move on to a little bit of a lighter subject now that we've done the This Week in Regulation segment. This was from the Creators Project blog. Meet the finalists of Intel's Make It Wearable Challenge. And one of the 10 finalists is called Nixie, a wristband. Wow. Called Nixie, a wristband camera that unfolds into a remote-controlled quadcopter.
You know, David, this is the story of the past week or so that I think I have seen in more publications online and more places than any other unmanned vehicle story that I've seen in a while. This is, for some reason, just really taken off.
Excuse the pun?
Oh, I did it again, didn't I? Sorry. So, Nixie, right. The idea is that upon command of a person wearing Nixie around their wrist, the thing unfolds, it flies up in the air, turns around, takes a picture of you, and then returns to you so that you can catch it and return it back to your wrist.
Adding new meaning to the selfie. Mm. This is really definitely self-indulgent technology. I'm assuming you would take pictures of other things, but it just...
It's an interesting, it's sort of one of those thought-provoking kinds of developments. The prototype of Nixie uses that same Intel Edison chip that we talked about, I think it was last week, David, the one that 3D Robotics is looking at for potential application as a drone controller. So it's kind of fun. There's some videos in the article that are worth taking a look at. The winning team, David, is to be announced at the beginning of November, November 3rd this year, 2014. So it'll be exciting to see. You know, I didn't even study the other finalists. I was so intrigued by this one. So I'm not sure how stiff the competition is, but we'll see how well Nixie does.
Well, that doesn't bode well for Nixie, considering she's very bendable around. She's not stiff. She's bendable. I just wonder how well it flies.
It's a tiny thing, and how easily do the propellers sort of fold up around your wrist or something? I mean, in the prototype, and it very much looks like a prototype, very kind of rough around the edges, if you will. As far as it being a commercially viable product, I'm not sure, but at least the concept is interesting, and Intel, of course, gets some more publicity for its new chip.
Though I could think that, you know, there might be a military application for it. Oh, you know, it would be kind of a great thing to have if you needed to see around a corner.
Sure.
Or such, you know, or so. Yeah, I could see applications, I guess, if I think about it. But let's talk about real practical applications now then. This was from sugarstring.com. Drones to stop poachers. And we've talked about this in the past, various organizations, but looks like the Shadowview Foundation are using drones to fight illegal poaching in Africa and Asia.
Yeah, ShadowView provides UAS for environmental conservation and also humanitarian relief operations. So this, of course, is a great thing. Poaching is a very serious problem in many areas. But there are others that are also working with drones in this area. We saw that a little while ago, the World Wildlife Fund, they actually received a $5 million grant for the work they were doing with drones that were specially designed by Falcon UAV. This is great stuff. This is another example of just a really positive application for drones. Because, you know, poachers are hard to catch. The terrain is oftentimes not very conducive to being surveyed by the authorities. It's easy for poachers to hide, hard to chase them. And a drone, whether it's a fixed wing or a rotary drone, is kind of an ideal tool to enforce the poaching laws.
One of the other advantages is most poaching does occur at night, and the UAVs have the ability to use infrared.
Right.
And they can provide documentation showing the crime being committed, you know. So it is a really useful tool, and it's nice to see at least now in the United States this would have been a commercial use, so nobody... We don't want that to be happening, but it's really important in Africa where a lot of species are in trouble because of poaching. So I guess we should move on to our new segment, or at least for this week, UAVs in social media and popular culture.
Yeah, Facebook, they're back in the news again. This is an article from NBC News titled "Facebook Wi-Fi Drone the Size of 747 Could Fly in 2015." So, Facebook, they're looking to address the 2/3 of the world that doesn't have internet access, and their idea is to put up large solar powered drones. This is something we talked about in episode 29. Which you can refer back to at theuavdigest.com/29. It's interesting, David, that Facebook doesn't really want to call them drones or anything else. They refer to them as planes. I'm not sure why. Maybe because that sounds better than drones.
Yeah, well, I don't think Mark Zuckerberg wants the world to know that he's investing in drones, because let's just string it together for logic's sake. Drones equals lack of privacy equals connected to Facebook, not good, and they're spying on the rest of the universe. So I can understand the logic while right. They're using the code word planes, but there's no reason why they can't say UASs or UAVs, but those are closer to drones. But these are not little airplanes, and I'm just wondering if they're actually going to fly by 2015, if that's actually a viable thing. Facebook says they're roughly the size of a 747. That's a lot of aircraft. Now, substantially lighter, and the reason why they're that big is because they're a giant solar panel.
Right.
But they're looking to provide what we would call back in 29 aerostats, or low altitude satellites. So, and they're cheating because they want to get around regulatory and technical barriers to let one person be in control up to 100 of the drones, which that's a lot of autonomy for these aircraft.
Yeah, I don't know how much maneuvering these things would do, or if they would kind of remain somewhat stationary.
I'm sure they would be following an orbit that they would, you know, over whatever area. They'd just be flying at altitude, a fixed altitude at with an orbit to cover that, whatever that area is for the Wi-Fi.
Now, one thing that I'm confused by is that I envision these things being at a fairly high altitude. I imagine above the altitude that commercial airliners would fly. Does that seem reasonable to you?
I would hope so, because I wouldn't want some large lumbering solar panel flying in the same airspace that airliners are flying.
Right.
And the higher up you go, the better coverage you'll get. You know, I mean, that's...
So how do you get that kind of range out of Wi-Fi? That's the part of it that I don't really have a firm grasp on. I mean, that's... Now you're talking about connecting to Wi-Fi from 50 or 60,000 feet over you. So I don't know how that would work, but I'm sure Facebook has got this addressed in a proper way. I don't understand the physics of it at this moment.
Speaking of physics, let's go on to the next one, which is my daily dose of I love internet rumors about Star Wars Episode 7.
Yeah.
Okay, I am a diehard Star Wars fan and have been since 1977. And the dailydot.com was talking about they are filming in Greenham Common, and which is a former Royal Air Force base, and they are using drones to film what is basically going to be a set for the movie. At one point, somebody happened to be flying over Greenham Common, which was a Royal Air Force base used by the United States Air Force, and now is a park. But one of the things that this has was a large group of buildings called the Gamma, which is the Ground Launch Cruise Missile Alert and Maintenance Area, which are sort of above ground but built into the ground hangars, which look really cool with X-Wings in front of them and the Millennium Falcon next to them.
Someone who's only identified as 3DLP flew his drone over this site and posted the video on YouTube. And as David said, he's got images of them filming, I guess, for the next Star Wars movie. And so you get to see the Millennium Falcon and some X-Wing fighters and also some people running around the area. I guess it wasn't clear to me if they were actually filming when this guy was flying over with his drone or if it's just sort of normal ground activity. But he's promoting this as sort of a sneak peek at what's happening in the next Star Wars movie.
Well, and the other thing about it is when he shot it, the Millennium Falcon wasn't complete. But if you do a Google search for Greenham Common kind of and comma Star Wars, you'll get to see that the set keeps growing and growing. They haven't officially started building yet. They're just building the scenery and the X-Wings and the Millennium Falcon to start filming. So it's a very awesome set, and it's really cool that drones are capturing it on a daily basis.
Yeah, but the movie production company must not be too pleased with that, right? I mean,
I'm sure J.J. Abrams is of the opinion, and he's been playing along. There's no way to hide this set, so they're going to film it, and there's nothing bad about hype and getting to see old school special effects like building sets instead of CGI. So I'm good with that.
So any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, especially when it comes to Star Wars.
Very good. So
a little closer to home to me than England. This was from my local CBS affiliate. New Jersey man accused of shooting down neighbor's remote control drone.
This starts out nice enough with someone using his drone to take pictures of a friend's house that was under construction. Well, another one of the neighbors, I guess, didn't like what he saw flying around in his neighborhood, and he took some action.
He took out the drone with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And then he was charged with possession of a weapon for an unlawful purpose or criminal mischief. Okay, folks, we knew this had to happen, but shooting at an aircraft is a federal offense. I don't think they're going to have federal charges against this gentleman who shot the poor DJI Phantom, but we're going to see more and more of this. This is one of those...
Yeah, the bad behavior segment.
You're grounded for bad behavior segment. That's right.
But we have some good behavior, some additional good behavior. And this one comes from an ABC channel affiliate. This is drone used in Hannah Graham search. Cops check for the cold case ties. And this is about a search in Virginia, where an Ariane Sky Ranger is being used to search for a missing University of Virginia student. She'd been missing, I think, for 2 weeks. And this is a case where the FAA, again, approved the use of the drone. Authorities in Virginia say it's the first time a drone has been used for a search operation in that state.
Ah, but you need to mention who was actually flying the drone. The Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership.
Right.
Which is why the FAA got the COA out to these people, because they're one of the six test sites. So last week we were talking about the FAA not giving direction to the test sites, but evidently the test sites can get something done if there's an emergency. So the COA for the Aeron Sky Ranger was already granted to MAAP. So that's how that worked out.
All right, very well. Now, David, we have a newest patron that we want to acknowledge.
Yeah, we'd like to thank Neil Reeves for joining our patrons, and we appreciate it. And keep in mind that if you'd like help Max and I fund this little endeavor, you could go to theuavdigest.com and select the donut. Select the donut link. Select the donate link. So we do appreciate Neil, and we appreciate our other patrons who are supporting us.
Very good.
So let's talk about videos of the week. Yeah, and I wish I remember who sent it to us. But yeah, if you like steam trains like I do in really beautiful countryside, it's an amazing high-def video. Shot with, of course, a DJI Phantom 2 with a GoPro 3 Plus. It's a really, really wonderful video, and I so want to go back to Scotland after seeing it.
Right. It's called
Beautiful Scotland.
It's called Beautiful Scotland, and it really is. You know, you look at this video, and I guess much of it could have been photographed with a helicopter, you know, a manned helicopter or something like that. But it would have been a hugely expensive endeavor. And with the Phantom, it's, a completely different thing. But this was done by a professional filmmaker. And so the quality is good. The aerial footage is just spectacular. I mean, this thing just wants to make you grab your passport, run to the airport, and find a flight to Scotland. It's really beautiful, really majestic.
I guess part of making a good movie is shooting a good subject. And he clearly had no wrong. I mean, it is really neat. And like I said, if you like steam trains, watching steam trains come at, and he was filming them when they were at full speed, so they got a long plume of smoke. And don't let it out that I like trains. People will think I'm weird. But if you like Harry Potter and you know what that train looks like, well, there's a lot of that footage in here.
Well, David, we're kind of running out of time, but we want to mention the email that we got from listener David Linville. We were talking about agricultural applications at the start of the show, and David has got a farm of his own in central Washington, a couple of thousand acres, and they farm it and they have range cattle. And he's been thinking about using a small UAV, he says, to check up on the cattle, keep an eye on things on the range. And he's looking at a DJI Phantom. And he's asking, he says that he likes the idea of being able to stream video, but would like to make sure that I'm getting a mix of capabilities versus ease of use. And that's balanced for his first UAV. He says he has some experience with radio control, though he's not active in that. And he does have his private pilot's license. So he's looking for any ideas or advice.
And you responded back to him as the DJI Phantom would be a good choice. It is the reason why it is the best selling UAV on the market. It's simple to fly. It takes great footage with the GoPro. And it's $800 to $1,160 for what you want. So you can start off, and it is scalable. So we'd like to thank David for listening and the nice things he said, and keep us posted. We'd like to maybe, David, after you get your video, do your DJI, learn to fly it. you send us some video of your cattle on the range so we can use it as the video of the week.
Yeah, and if any of you listening have some other advice, other specific advice for this kind of an application, we really invite you to send that in to us, and we'll take a look at that. We'll pass that along and share that with all of you. Also, we have a webpage with a number of UAV resources, links, and so forth. That has an agriculture section. That's over at 30,000feet.com/UAV. 30,000 feet is spelled out. And as I mentioned, there's an agriculture section there. If you're in that interest group, take a look at that. And if there are other resources that you know about that may help others interested in using UAVs for agriculture, please pass those along to us and we'll add them in.
So I guess with that, we should probably tell everybody how to get a hold of us. Of course, you know the website is theuavdigest.com. On Twitter, you can find us at @UAVDigest. For Facebook, facebook.com/UAVDigest. And how can they get a hold of us like a lot of people do, and we love it?
By email. You can send your email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. If you want to direct it to one of us, you can send it to either david@theuavdigest.com or max@theuavdigest.com. Be sure to find us on iTunes if that's what you use and you haven't subscribed to us. We recommend subscribing so that the episodes show up automatically. If you do use iTunes, we'd really appreciate a review or a rating. Those help us a lot. We also have a presence on Stitcher.com. You can find us there. And, of course, you can order some T-shirts, other swag from our site, or go to cafepress.com/theuavdigest.
And, of course, we mentioned our patron page earlier, so we'd like to thank our donators. And we'd like to thank our sponsors, Go Engineer and
UAV Propulsion Tech.
So with that, it's time to say goodbye. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.